20 minutes ago, I'd been certain I was going to take another trip through the revival machines. I dared to smile. The bio was going to wake up pissed off if she did remember all this. I wasn't sure which one of us had broken more regulations during our encounter, but I sincerely hoped I wouldn't need her help again. By the time I reached my own bunk and sank into it, I had a jug of water in my hand. I drained most of it, then poured more on my head. I sighed and stretched out. I half expected Carlos's face to come over the top of my bunk like a full moon. I could almost hear his big mouth smarting off at me. But then I realized he was dead. They all were dead. I was almost alone in my unit on Steel World. Most of my squadron had died over the last few hours and were now up on Corvus, if they hadn't been permed. I found a snap rifle and planned to fall asleep with it across my chest. I closed my eyes and tried to rest. I was tired and felt beaten down. I knew I shouldn't sleep right now, but I had to get rest whenever I could. I woke a few hours later to a terrible grinding sound. I felt sure for several confused seconds that the orderlies had me again. I came up into a sitting position on my bunk, feeling feverish. My snap rifle was aimed into the dark with the safety flipped off. No one was there but a few fellow recruits. They groaned and rolled out of their beds to their feet. "What's going on?" I demanded.
"How the hell should I know?"
came an answer from a female voice in the dark. I recognized the voice. It was Kiwi. "Hey!" I called out. "I thought you died a while back." She got out of her bunk and came down the row to sit on mine. We regarded each other in the dark room, waiting for orders.
"It was close," she said. "But while you were chasing dinos in that tunnel, the bio people patched me up in their bunker. They can do more than just revive us if they want to."
"Yeah, I've just come from there. I'm sore, but functioning."
"Maybe the people who died are the lucky ones," she said. "But only because you risked everything to keep them from getting permed. That was cool, James."
I smiled. "Not everyone thinks so." I was about to tell her the story of the bio centurion who decided I'd seen too much and needed recycling when the lights flipped on and the arrows on the floor lit up. They were red this time, emergency colors. We pulled on our gear quickly and rushed out together. There were plenty of spare helmets with so many people missing, so I took one and put it on. More people from our unit gathered, but there were no veterans or officers. Not knowing what was happening, we aimed our weapons at everyone else who joined us in the main hallways. "Have you heard anything over the unit channel?" I asked Kiwi.
"Nothing," she said. "But something's up. I bet someone got hit."
We followed our ant trail of arrows to the exits and stepped outside. I half expected to see an incoming bombardment or even an invasion force at the gates, but there was nothing there.
"Look at HQ!"
shouted Kiwi at my side. The command post was a puffcrete bunker they'd set up behind the terminal building. It was gone. Or at least half of it was. There was a small cloud of dust with a flickering orange light inside.
"Fire!" Kiwi said. "It's on fire!"
"It's more than on fire," I said. "It's been taken out. That's why we haven't gotten any orders."
"Can you get through to Harris or Leeson?"
I tried. All the troops coming out of the bunker did. Our tappers had locating units on them. The tappers worked, but they weren't telling us anything because we were disconnected from the network. More and more people were coming out of their barracks, and some were streaming down from the walls where guards had been posted. As a group, we decided to head toward the HQ to see if we could render assistance. There was a lot of confusion about what to do with our command post knocked out. "That's a crater," a tech specialist said to me as we trotted closer. He was a small guy with small eyes and an angry red face. He'd come over from the non-com barracks following his own set of emergency arrows.
"That means the lizards must have used air power."
"I don't hear any planes," I said. "It's been quiet except for that single grinding sound followed by some kind of explosion."
"Well then, what did this?"
the tech asked me petulantly.
"I don't know," I said.
But someone purposefully knocked out the HQ. That means we have no networking or officers on duty. The tech was nodding. That explains the emergency arrows. The system only knows how to lead people to their gathering points when something really goes wrong. When we reached the HQ, I was relieved to find Harris directing traffic and Leeson giving orders.
About time you recruits showed up, Leeson said to us. Form a perimeter. I have enough people looking for survivors already.
We spread out with Harris bullying us into good firing positions. There wasn't much cover, but we took what we could find and watched the night around us. The next event took everyone by surprise. I think it was more startling because we all saw it with our own eyes. The Blue Medical Center, the same building where I'd been abused just hours earlier, suddenly turned into a plume of dust. I saw dust shooting up into the air in a dark cloud. When it cleared, the medical bunker was gone.
"We need to get the men out there, sir," shouted Harris.
Leeson looked at him and nodded.
"I'm in contact with the surviving officers. We're evacuating every structure."
I stared at the missing building and thought for a moment.
"I heard something, sir," I said. "A grinding sound right before it went down."
"Yeah, what the hell does that mean?"
I think they're tunneling under us, weakening the supports and sinking our bunkers."
Leeson, Harris, and the red-faced tech guy all looked at me like I was crazy for a second, but then Leeson nodded.
"It does make sense. I've been wondering why they were taking so damn long to hit us after the initial bombardment. If anyone should know what drilling through the metallic soil on this planet sounds like, it would be you. Okay, I'm relaying that up the chain of command."
What happened next surprised us all again, although in retrospect maybe it shouldn't have. The Saurians were playing this game their own way. As it turned out, they liked to tunnel. Like every world, the reptilian inhabitants of Cancri 9 only had so many credits to spend on imported alien tech. On Earth, we spent that cash on interstellar invasion ships, weaponry, and special devices like our revival machines. We put our galactic credits into tech that would help return more credits. Anything that helped us fight was an investment to us. The Saurians had done a similar economic calculus. If there was one thing they had the very best of, it was drilling equipment. Steel World was a mining planet, and to mine right through hard metals, you needed amazing drills. Plasma-burning drills were just such pieces of equipment. When the first rig surfaced, it looked like a plasma grenade on overload. It was blue and ran with sizzling force fields. Unlike standard military screens, the fields enveloping the drilling machines weren't set to repel incoming ordnance. The screens moved and churned like invisible blades of force that spun around the central machine like knives of energy. Steel, puffcrete, soldiers, and vehicles were sliced away to nothing when they touched those spinning fields. We all hunkered down and stared as the ground vomited up 1, 2, 3, 6 of them. They weren't terribly large, but the troops that rushed out of the back end when they stopped spinning looked big to me. Armored and carrying heavy weapons, Saurians charged out to fire on anyone in sight. We returned fire, but our weaponry wasn't penetrating their armor.
"Harris, gather all your light troops and attack!"
Leeson shouted. I looked at him like he was crazy. We all did.
"You heard the man," Harris said grimly. "Stay low. Flank them while staying under cover. Spray fire at them from the sides."
We deployed and did as we were ordered. Unsurprisingly, it was a slaughter. Every time they got a bead on one of us, we were splattered. Our chattering snap rifles raked them but did no damage.
"With all due respect, veteran,"
I shouted when he hunkered down nearby,
"we can't get through to those troops. Why are we doing this?"
We were taking shelter behind a broken wall that was about 3 feet high. The top was black with soot and smoldering. Harris reloaded his gun methodically. I couldn't help but notice that he had kept his head down and only taken a few pot shots at the enemy now and again.
"We're here to engage and distract, McGill," he said. "That's the real purpose of light infantry in any serious fight. You should know that by now. Don't worry, the revival machine on Corvus is operating just fine." "I understand we're cannon fodder, veteran. I just don't understand why we're throwing away troops."
He shook his head and chuckled.
"We aren't. Leeson is organizing the weaponeers. They're the only ones who can take out these Saurian heavies. We have to give them the time he needs to get them into position.